Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Teresa Samson and Chris Elogi. Say hi, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
Yeah, so this show is going to be for September 25th, 2021, last show of the month, and also last show of the summer, basically, because technically it's already fall now. And it's starting to actually feel like it, believe it or not. The temperature has been very mild over the last few days. We have not had to deal with like any extreme humidity or, you know, any temperature above 90. It's been hovering around, you know, 79, 82. So all in all, it's actually feels good. I can actually go outside and not melt.
Yeah.
You know, except for all the rain, but, you know, beggars can't be choosers. Yeah, so, what are we doing this episode? Well, a bunch of crap happened this week, as is normal. We finally got the results for that long, quixotic, and ultimately fruitless election audit that was happening in Arizona. And that one was just funny.
Oh.
The way it ends, and we'll tell you why. We also have more COVID news, including some good COVID news that is going to hopefully we'll get to a point where we can start giving the vaccine to children under 12. Also, we basically reached Spanish flu levels of death this week, which pretty much, I guess, puts the Spanish flu officially to shame then. It basically makes this a deadlier disease pandemic in the U.S. than the Spanish flu was. Which, as I have to remind people, is only called the Spanish flu because Spain was the only newspapers that was actually talking about it actively. Mm-hmm. We still have no idea where the Spanish flu actually came from. We also have no idea where it went either. Mm-mm. Oh yeah, that ongoing saga with the just absolutely batshit insane abortion laws in Texas took its next logical step. We'll be telling you about that. The ongoing sort of legacy of don't ask, don't tell is sort of being reassessed this week also. Hobby Lobby got fucked.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And of course, we got some nice science news. We got another hurricane, though fortunately it doesn't look like it's going to hit us. And McDonald's is ending a long tradition. Although, is it really that long of a tradition? I'm not sure. But they're ending a long tradition this week. And of course, we got a crap ton of Netflix news as well. So.
Nice.
Yes. With that, we have all that and more on this week's edition of Let's Weekend. So, to start us off as always, let's talk about what we've been doing this week. And Teresa, you picked short straw, so you start first.
I have been watching Ted Lasso. I am not quite caught up, mm-hmm. which is killing me because the internet is killing me. Mm-hmm. I'm a couple of episodes behind, but so far, I think season two is not as strong as season one. Mm-hmm. I will say that. However, clearly they swept everything in the award shows, and with good reason. Still super enjoying it. But the reason I'm not caught up is because of Only Murders in the Building, which is Steve Martin and Martin Short, and somebody Gomez. I want to say Selena Gomez, but I'm pretty sure that's not her first name. Mm-hmm. A fucking amazing. Obviously, Nathan Lane is in it too, which is just...
Because of course.
Yeah, because of course. And Sting is in there, and I am a huge Sting fan. Like, I was thinking about flying out to Vegas this fall just to go see him in concert.
Mm.
But Vegas is somewhere I won't go on my own, and Scott will not go with me to another Sting concert. And I can't get my brother to drive down to Nashville and fly out and meet me in Vegas. So I am shit out of luck. Unless any of you want to go and escort me to see Sting, that would be fine.
Not yet.
But Only Murders in the Building is really great. You know, I like sometimes going down a rabbit hole and reading about, you know, real life type stuff, but real life stuff is, it's icky and it's real. And, you know, there's hurt in there and everything. So having a twisty, spiraling story that just takes all sorts of weird turns, that's make-believe, is great. This is great. So if you haven't watched it, it's on Hulu, and it is absolutely worth watching. It just keeps getting better and better. Wait until Tuesday, because that's when the next episode is out. Also been keeping up with Star Trek Lower Decks, although we haven't watched this week's episode. We have it, we just haven't watched it yet. We watched the first episode in the new Star Wars Visions thing, and I see that that's going to be talked about later, so I'll put a pin in that. But did enjoy it, but I'm kind of like, okay. I did not enjoy it as much as Scott and Jacob enjoyed it. So I try not to sit and use my phone whenever I'm watching TV. I like to be fully involved in my entertainment. I was on my phone. yeah. So as far as gaming goes, I am still playing Garden Story. I think I'm about to move to the fall themed part of the map. But I'm having a little bit of a hard time with the main boss. Which I'll be writing a review on it, but I will say the one thing that is annoying is that you don't really use any of your weapon and shield skills that well until you get to the main boss. So the muscle memory isn't there because you don't have to use it. So it's really fucking annoying when when you have to start using it. Also, PSO 2 New Genesis, been playing a little bit of that with Pat. Still working out. I need to figure out when the season thing, the special event ends, because I have a shitload of points to cash in, and I forgot to do it for the last season. I need to not do that this time. And then we're back on our shit, man. We're playing Kingdom Two Crowns again. I also did play a little solo, so I was playing New Lands, which is a little better in the randomness, and it doesn't get quite as rote and routine. But yeah, I think that's about it. I don't even know what I do on a personal level anymore. I just try to fucking keep up with my calendar. Holy shit. And when I'm busy, I'm busy. And when I'm not, I'm in front of the TV. Because there is so much good shit to watch. Oh, and I have Mirror. Who's that Russian guy who did it? Anyway, I've got that at the library waiting for me. So I'll probably go get that tomorrow and watch it. All right. Yeah, pretty good to get an old movie in there for the weekend.
Alrighty. Chris, what about you?
So this week's been pretty good weather-wise. Been a lot of times in the 50s and 60s, especially in the morning, which is pretty nice. I think the one day I had to go into work early, it was 49, wind chill of 45. So that was pretty fun to be like, shit, I got to pull out some pants for this one, because it's not, at least for that day, not shorts weather. for that. So that was fun, but it seems like it's going to be stabilizing a bit more now, being like the about high of 70 for most days. So here for the next few days, so that'll be nice. But yeah, for what I've been watching, I've been watching Star Wars Visions, watched through the whole thing, and really enjoyed it. Seems to do a really good job of bringing some good kind of visual and setting variety to the universe. You don't often get in the big movies and all that that are still so focused on the Tatooine and all these other planets that you see a number of times.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch of cool episodes here. There's one that's kind of, and they're all about, most of them are about like 15 minutes or so.
Well, some of them are about 15. Some of them are about 20. The longest one, I think, is like 20, 22.
Yeah. So they're kind of a nice size. So you kind of get a little bit of lore, but not too much. Kind of just lets you jump in without too much worrying about where it's set in or whatever.
I will say the really good episodes feel less like short films and more like TV pilots.
Yeah.
Like they're the sort of jumping off point for what would be a series. So have you, how many have you watched? Have you watched all of them?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you have any particular that stood out to you?
Let me see. I'm looking at the list now. I did like the one with the Jedi and his Padawan.
Yeah.
Taking on this mysterious old man.
Yeah, I think that one's called The Elder, I think it's called. Yeah.
Yeah. That one was pretty nice. The one that was, let's see. Oh, yeah, the Village Bride.
Yeah.
That one's really nice. As kind of like, oh, the Empire has just left their droids on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
The bandits have like captured them and reprogrammed them.
Yep.
Their bidding sort of thing. And some shit's going down as a result of that.
Yeah.
A common theme of abilities here for Jedi is that they can stop the bolts.
Yep.
Whatever shots are shot, which it's not done too often in the movies or the games.
Well, because you have to be I'm pretty sure to do that, you have to be like a fairly advanced in your Jedi training and able to pull that off.
Yeah. There's a nice one that's sort of about just a rock band.
Mm-hmm. The one, trying to remember. Yeah, it's called like Tatooine Rhapsody or something.
Yeah. But they're kind of doing their performance at the pod racing track.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And then like they get tied up with Jabba at some point.
Yeah. So some cool stuff here. This one is kind of like a spin on the Luke and Leia thing.
Yeah.
There's that. Some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to spoil too much here, but there's definitely a lot of good Japanese influence on this stuff. You know, there's
one that's very like strong.
Shogun style system going on.
Yeah.
There's one that's, you know, the first one's very much a wandering samurai.
Yeah, the first one's very much a Kurosawa sort of love letter.
Yeah, and it has a really nice art style to it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, there's just a lot of cool stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lot of fun. And definitely some of these I would like to be expanded into their own movie or series or whatever.
Yeah. Some of them I think would be easier to sort of absorb into canon than others. But
yeah.
Yeah, that's up the loop. That's up to Disney, I guess.
Yeah. It's nice that they are finally doing some experimentation with Star Wars stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than a lot of stuff being so tied up into tying into the canon that they are set for in specific time frames.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of it for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of just plays a little fast and loose with that stuff.
Yep.
So yeah, that's been pretty cool there. Let's see. Been listening to Montero, the new Little Nas X album.
Yeah, he actually put out, I'm pretty sure that's actually his first full-length album, isn't it?
Yeah, his debut album.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got a few of the singles that you've heard so far. Industry Baby, Montero, and I forget the other one is. I think it's That's What I Want.
Yeah.
I think it's the other one that's been a single so far.
Yeah, I'm going to take a shot in the dark here. Is any one of the versions of Old Town Road on there?
Nope.
Good on him.
I think that's just staying as a single.
Yeah. Well, a single and like a crap ton of remixes.
Yeah. But there's some really good songs. Like he really throws those three singles out like early on.
Mm-hmm.
there are three of the first four songs on the album, and the rest kind of get to stay in there.
Yeah.
And he's got a lot of good stuff here, and it's not just a hip-hop album or anything.
Yeah.
He does a lot of good work with just breaking out of that. So there's like a couple songs that are almost kind of like a pop rock kind of vibe to it. There's one where Elton John plays piano on it. He doesn't sing, which was weird.
Well, I mean, on the one hand, you know, Elton John has always been an amazing pianist on his own.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that he's able to actually get that part of his artistry onto the album and not necessarily have to get his voice on it. Not that I necessarily dislike Elton John's voice or anything. It's just, well, Elton John doing duets is kind of played out. Let's be honest.
Yeah. But he gets to do, you know, one with a gay icon.
Mm-hmm. And a new gay icon.
Yeah. There's definitely songs that are about how his family was very much not happy with him when he came out as gay.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, as he starts to get actual success, like coming back and acting like they supported him all along and telling him to go fuck off.
Well, it wasn't entire all his family. His brother was certainly supportive of him pretty early on. But
yeah,
yeah, it's true.
Especially talking about his parents and that that kind of stuff. Some real good stuff. Definitely recommend checking it out.
It's surprising that, you know, I think of him about Lil Nas X is how so many, like, and Teresa, you can back me up on this. How many people thought that Lil Nas X was going to be like the new one-hit wonder guy?
I think a lot of people did.
Like, we all thought that, you know, he got this, he came up with this niche song that basically became extremely popular in a way that only a song in like 2019 could become popular. It, you know, it debuted on YouTube with a bunch of, you know, using a bunch of found video game footage. And then it became like part of like a, what was it? Like, I think it was like a TikTok trend. And then at the same time,
I think it was on Vine actually, wasn't it?
No, Vine has been dead for a while.
it would have to be TikTok. No, I thought he was doing this back in like 2017 or shit.
No, it was 2018.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah. And then it became sort of a cause celeb because, you know, it became like a hit on like the country charts. And then the country music industry was like, no, this song isn't country enough. And they took it off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is incredibly funny when you, well, look, Teresa, we both grew up in relatively white rural households. We've both heard what country music these days sounds like, right?
It is not what country music was when I was a kid. That is for goddamn sure.
So Old Town Road was a hell of a lot more country than what most modern country is. Let's be completely honest.
Yeah.
Plus, it was just a good song. So you had like that perfect storm that made him a cultural phenomenon. And then everybody thought that, you know, because he kept putting out all these different new remixes of Old Town Road, that this is going to be like his one and only hit. Uh-huh. And then he put out one, and then he started putting out other songs, and he kept getting other hits, and then he kept getting other hits. And it turned out that the dude is definitely not a one-trick pony.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he is a master of his social media.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff, able to trigger the right kinds of people to get mad.
Mm-hmm.
That are just getting mad just to posture.
Yeah.
As he realizes that sort of stuff, which is why, you know, in Montero's video,
he's
working with the devil.
Yeah. Which is hilarious because the dude playing the devil does not emote, like, at all.
Yeah. Because he's just reacting to the way that people is like, oh, you being gay, you're going to hell.
Yeah, he's like, wait, no, not like that.
It's like, how dare you be allowed to do this? And leading up to this album's release, he's had the prosthetic pregnant belly on him.
Yeah.
Well, posting pictures.
And then there was that, like, golden armor that he wore at, what was it, like the Met Gala, I think? Yeah.
That was very JoJo.
Oh, yeah.
that kind of thing. So, yeah. And he does a good job of having a good sense of humor, reacting to memes and all that kind of stuff about saying, because there's a constant meme of people acting like they're not going to listen to his music because it could turn him gay. And then you look at these TikToks and then you see them dancing in the background or something to it, showing that they're, you know, hypocrites on that stuff.
Yeah,
this album just has a lot of good songs on it.
Yeah.
Really well done. Sort of a great start for his career. Because I think even one of the songs mentions how he was doing music, you know, before Old Town Road and all that, just wasn't going anywhere. And then just found, you know, success.
Yeah.
And found who in his family are leeches.
Yeah.
Instead of actually being supportive of him. That sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's a really well done album.
Yeah.
For listening, and if you're not into hip hop, because I think it straddles a good line of moving all over the spectrum of music.
Well, Old Town Road showed that he, by itself, showed he had a fairly broad spectrum already. So
yeah.
But yeah, this this album's been quite good. And I've been weirdly pulling it up while I was playing Axiom Verge recently, which kind of fit pretty well for that. So that was a nice little surprise. But yeah, that's that. I also listened to Screen Violence, the new Churches album. Having not really listened to any of their other albums, just their occasional songs that would get into games and whatnot. But it sounds like more of that, but also it's really well done for what it was.
To know about that. I love that band.
Yeah, and I like listening to, especially like British, Irish, Scottish performers, and seeing when their accent breaks through.
Yeah,
because a lot of those artists usually sing, you know, American style English. But that one especially, you can hear the front lady's Scottish accent getting through there at times. Like, ooh, there it is.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, that's been fun too. For the music side, let's see, what else do I have here? Yeah, as for games, I've been playing Kena,
Bridge of Spirits. I have heard good things about this.
Yeah, it's not pronounced Kena, it's Kena.
It's Kena, yeah.
So that was the big surprise there. But this game, $40, PS4, PS5, PC. I'm playing it on PS5 to stream of the first couple hours last night. Enjoying it a lot so far. It definitely picks up once you get the sort of second form of the staff you start with. Because early on, it's just melee attacks with that staff. As your, it has like a Dark Souls style control scheme. As far as like R1, R2 for, you know, your normal attack, your power attacks kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's not a Souls style combat system to it. So a lot of the enemies, like the fodder enemies, you can just kind of mesh out, you know, combos to take them out pretty quickly. But once you start getting further in, they layer on, you know, more enemies coming at you, throw in some of the bigger dudes that require some more thought to them. Basically, like the first boss you face essentially becomes more of a normal enemy. So it kind of throws a nice little wrench in there. They do. Then once you get to this like first big objective, you meet this dude and he shows you how to kind of use your staff as a bow, essentially, like a spirit bow, I guess.
Yeah.
So that kind of adds a new dimension to your ability to interact with the environment as well as your attacks. So you kind of get this more range attack kind of motion to it, or options to it. So then you get your first boss, and he just fucking whoops your ass because he is not fucking around with that stuff. They also throw in, like, at the beginning of that fight, there are just these dudes that hang out in trees. So you need to sort of quickly take them out with your bow. They're just hanging out in trees, throwing stuff at you, so you're going to have to do that pretty quickly. But once you do that, the, I think it's called the Wood Knight, appears. Obviously, like a wooden golem coming at you. And he has a few attacks, not really too much variety to it, but it's a matter of just getting the hang of the dodges. You can parry if you're actually good enough at that, because you have like a shield that you can use. It's not like an actual shield, it's more of a spirit shield, sort of bubble that goes around you, that kind of thing. So there's like a good bit of options at that point. I managed to take that out by the end of the stream. And that kind of opens up everything, because you're given a new task, but you can sort of go around and look for things you passed that you needed the bow to get. There's a good bit of stuff to collect in each of the areas. That is not anything like a collect-a-thon kind of game, but it's at least some busy work that you can use for that. So been enjoying that. Looking forward to putting some more time into it. Looks pretty nice. I wouldn't say it looks as good as, you know, a Ratchet and Clank, but it certainly is a very nice looking game, especially from a studio that had a lot of work in sort of CG animation in the past for that, especially for a $40 game. So that's been a nice game to play. I'll probably talk more about it tomorrow on Day Zero, but that's been that. There's also Rocket League. Just been putting some more time into that as the new week has gone on. And I just having a lot of bad luck with matchmaking. Getting into games where you just get worked.
Hey.
That just kind of sucks, but I get some winning streaks here and there, but the ones where we get, you know, down by 4, 5, 6 goals, nice demoralizing, make me want to take a break for a little while, for a day or two, let the matchmaking gods take it easy on me. But yeah. That's been pretty much it for me. How about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I am still primarily playing Tales of Arise. Last time I talked about that, I said how, like, compared to a lot of the past Tales games that I played, this one was immediately a lot darker and grimmer than any of the other games had ever been. excuse me. I had no idea how right I was, because holy shit. Midway through this game, it gets a hell of a lot darker. Because the whole sort of plot behind Tales of Arise is that there's these two planets. There's Donna and Rena. And about 300 years before the game starts, the planet of Rena invades the planet of Donna and basically impose their own sort of personal empire over it, and essentially turn all of the native Donnans into slaves in one form or another. And then they then divide it up into 5 different realms, and every realm has very specific kinds of elements to it. The first one that you start in is very much like a volcanic with like lots of fire and ash. The next one is like cold and frosty, and the next one has lots of trees and forests. And it, you know, it kind of goes from there. And the reason is because all of the lords that are head of these realms all specialize in astral arts, which are basically this game's version of, you know, magic, for lack of a better term. But the thing is, they have a, in order who ends up being the one main ruler, like the top ruler of all of the Don realms, is to become the sovereign. They have this weird contest that they have where every person has to get as much astral energy that they can siphon from their subjects as they can for every few years until the next, you know, and whoever gets the most ends up becoming the next sovereign. And the way they do this is they basically force their Donnan subjects to manual labor. And so essentially you end up playing this guy named Well, I forget what his name is at the moment, but he starts out as a slave who then ends up getting a hold of a sword. He meets up with a rogue Renan woman named Shion, who has a rifle. And he gets together with the local resistance group called the Crimson Crows. They overthrow the lord of the realm that they start out with called Calaglia. And here's the thing. It, as you go through sort of these different realms, it basically shows you, you know, different ways that these rulers sort of rule their specific realms. The first one, the guy who roams it, is he basically just rules it through sheer brutality. He's basically like, you know, like a barbarian sort of Genghis Khan type figure who rules over his particular area like a wasteland. Then you get to the second one, and he particularly rules over his particular realm, which is all frosty and wintry, by use of a group called the Snake Eyes, who are basically a secret police force that not only cruelly subjugates the Donnan themselves and puts down any kind of dissent that they can find, but they also have a system set up where if Donnans inform on other Donnans, they can get paid rather handsomely by the government. Which is, and that's like, holy shit, that's pretty awful. Then you get to the next one, and the next one is unique because the guy who is the head of it is a guy named Dolaheen. He is completely unlike the others, the other lords up to that point, because he has essentially abolished slavery in his particular kingdom. And he's allowed, you know, all the Donnans who work on a system of equality with the Renans who live there. And they all, you know, are paid a decent living wage and, you know, they're free to go. They all have like good Medicare and stuff. And you go in there, and then you meet the guy, and yeah, he's a good guy, and he's genuine in his beliefs. But you find out that even if the Donnans are well paid, they are essentially still slaves. And it's at that point you realize that Dolaheen isn't just, you know, just a good lord. He's essentially the moderate, sort of moderate liberal reformer who is trying to, like, make the essential conditions better, but he refuses to actively look at do anything about the essential system itself. And then you get to the next realm, and the dude, literally, like, the dude already overthrew and drove out the original lord, but he's basically, the resistance leader has basically made himself the dictator of the realm, and everything is just, holy shit, it gets really dark and really cerebral in this game. It really does. They put an awful lot of thought into this shit. It's amazing. I'm actually not sure who it is that's doing the review. It's either me or Danreb. I don't know, but it's damn good. It's really damn good. Also, that for those who don't know, second chapter of Deltarune, Toby Fox put it out for free recently, and I've been playing that. It's good. I mean, it's a Toby Fox joint, so you know what to expect, and it more than lives up to its reputation. It's very, It's very fun. It's sometimes hysterically funny. And sometimes it is just gut-wrenchingly depressing at the same time. Yeah, definitely recommend that as well. Much like Teresa and Chris here, I've also watched Star Wars Visions. I haven't watched all of them. I've watched a few of them, which I've been told that the best way to approach the series is don't try and watch all of them and binge them in one sitting, sort of spread them out a bit. And what I've seen, I can definitely say that some episodes are definitely better than others. I mean, that's kind of to be expected from an anthology series. Like I said, the really good ones tend to be the ones that sort of start out more like TV pilots than actual short films. The one exception being The Duel, because that one is just absolutely freaking amazing on its own. But my two favorites so far are The Twins, which is the one that Studio Trigger put out. And it's basically about these two, this twin brother and sister who were raised in the dark side of the Force, getting ready to set up this new super weapon on this ship that's like a combined combination of two, I think they're Star Destroyers. My knowledge of Star Wars ship models is not always that good. At some point, the brother, for whatever reasons, decides to just fuck off with the crystal that they're using to power the thing. And the animation, of course, it's Studio Trigger, so it looks amazing. The actual plot is a little thin, I will admit, but it's good enough to stand up on its own, to sort of start its own series. The other one I really, really liked was the one called Lop and Ocho, which I think is the one that's sort of also, a lot of people are also saying it's definitely one of the best. If you're wondering which one this is the one with the little bunny girl. Yeah, that one. And the story is that she is like a member of like an empire, like a group of rabbit-like aliens that were enslaved by the Empire, and she ends up escaping her slave camp when she's a little kid, and she's found by a couple of locals on this planet where they decide to adopt her into their family. And then, you know, years later, when they've both grown up, you know, to become young adults, the sister, because it's a father, a sister, and Lop, and the sister, her name is Ocho, is like dealing with this issue of like, because the Empire had been adopted a few years prior onto the planet to help them develop, you know, industrially. There's this issue of like the environmental destruction that they've also been. And so there's this sort of split between the daughter and the father, because, you know, the father is like, you know, they're exploiting our resources for their own ends. You know, we need to drive them off. And the daughter is like, no, they're helping us develop. And then she ends up defecting to the Empire. And it's good. I'm not going to spoil it because it's a damn good short. And if there is any short on here that I hope they end up making to a series, it's definitely this one. Because it's really good. I will say English dubbing is really all over the place. So like I talked about in The Twins, the male twin is Neil Patrick Harris, and he doesn't do a bad job. He definitely does a competent job, but it's definitely one of those examples of where I wish they'd actually gotten an actual professional voice actor.
Was it just Neil Patrick Harris doing Neil Patrick Harris as the voice?
Yeah, kinda.
Okay, which is a shame because he can do some voices.
Yeah, he can.
Yeah,
I know he can, but
.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely is putting effort into his performance. It's not like he's just winging it or anything. But
and it could be the director wanted his voice to be his voice, but
yeah. And as there's been talk over the last
lately
few days about the celebrity voice actor voice complex. Casting. Yeah. And I have some friends who are voice actors, and let's just say they are definitely not happy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there is a difference between people like Mark Hamill, who earned their right to be considered part of the voice actor, you know, fraternity, and those like, well, yeah.
Yeah, but... I know that it doesn't belong on this podcast, but I will say Anya Taylor-Joy, she can do voices. So let's hope that she gives a great performance in whatever it is that the script ends up being.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah. But moving on from there, I finished Firefly for the second time. So I guess I'm going to have to get a copy of Serenity. Mm-hmm. Which, believe it or not, I've never actually seen. So this will. Ooh. Yeah, I know. I know.
I mean, you know what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, it's pretty. We pretty much everybody. It's.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the whole series up to that point has been leading to it. So.
Okay.
But
I'm interested to hear what you think about that.
Yeah, but I got to get a copy of it first. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and since you weren't here, Teresa, for this last week, yeah, are continuing because we got another rodent problem.
Oh no!
Yeah.
What's not Reavers, yeah? Is it?
Is it Reavers? No, fortunately not. That's a Firefly reference for all of you who didn't get that. Something that they talk and put up for the whole goddamn series and see them until the movie, but
and they're fucking terrifying.
Oh yes, they are legit terrifying. I've seen the screenshots. but this isn't the first time we've had rodents. We've had a mouse problem here. Yeah. We had our first mice show up. Early last year.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We actually had never had a mouse problem until then.
Really?
Weirdly enough. Yeah.
Well, you lucky.
And I strike it all up to climate change, to be honest.
Yeah. This is the time of year, man. They are there. They are freaking there.
We've also got trash pandas, but they're not as big of an issue for us.
So, what's your family's take on having a cat?
My mom is allergic, so
it's out of the picture. That would be a no.
Yeah. Also, we also have Brody here, and
is he pretty good with that?
Brody is weirdly like playful aggressive with just about every animal he comes across.
Okay.
So, if we brought it in as like a kitten, he would probably be fine, but a full grown cat, no, he would.
He's gonna fuck it up.
Oh yeah. But again, that's out of the question anyway. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, is he pretty good with moles? I'm assuming you have a shit ton of moles, like everybody does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have moles. We have freaking chipmunks.
Yeah.
We have to be careful because we've also got coyotes too. So.
Yeah.
That's what got Toby, if you remember.
I was just thinking about him because I saw two coyotes last night on the way home from picking my kid up from band. They just popped right out of the woods.
Yeah.
And I think it was a mother and a teenage, probably. It looked pretty grown.
Yeah. And that's the thing about coyotes. If you see two, there's more than a dozen others behind them hiding somewhere. Because that's specifically what they're trying to do. They sneak up on you and slowly grow their numbers as they're following you.
Yeah. Yeah, we have quite a few of them living in the suburbs, but they need to be here.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of prey for them in the forests that are around us.
Yeah.
And in the goddamn, what do you call them, where they play golf? Golf course.
Yeah.
And they're all...
Oh, we also have wildcats, too. Did I mention that? Yeah, we got wildcats.
Yeah, they hang out every now and again in my brother's back 40, which is just back four. But they're not super common, but they do happen.
Yeah.
Not up here. They don't live here. They might be in freaking Wisconsin. I don't know. I don't know if they can survive that cold.
Yeah.
But
anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's what I've been up to this week. So anything we want to add before we move on? Nope.
Nope.
Alrighty then. In that case, it's now time to move on to everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today I thought we'd go back to everybody's sort of everybody's favorite well of knowledge for this part of the show. And that's Japan. Specifically Japanese food. Specifically the type of food that Japanese people tend to eat every day. Because when Japanese foods first sort of made its way over here to the U.S., you know, it sort of colored the way we think of Japanese food. Because you know, originally it started off with like the ritzy sushi places that, you know, started showing up on like the West Coast. And then, you know, you started getting like the Benny, the Shoguns and the Mikadas, you know, the hibachi places.
Yeah.
Which are largely an American invention. Like, you will find places in Japan that do, like, you know, Mongolian barbecue and stuff like that. But the type of stuff that you get here in the U.S. is really, largely of an American bent.
Usually.
Yeah. Usually.
I will point you to the studio chat where I have pictures of our last ramen experience a few days ago.
Yeah.
That one's authentic as fuck.
But when it comes to like Japanese food that people eat every day, like something that they'll, you know, go out, like say they're on the way home, you know, they're on the way to the train station or something and getting ready to head back to wherever they are. They're heading to work or whatever. They're on their lunch break. You can think of a couple things. Obviously, ramen is definitely one of them. Or udon, mm-hmm. or some, you know, or champon. Basically, any kind of noodle dish, which anybody, you know, which if you've ever been to Japan and you've seen Japanese people eating at those places, they do not take their time. They're meant to be slurped up as fast as possible. But there's another thing that a lot of Japanese eat. One that is actually probably one of my favorite things from Japan. And it's very quickly become, it's kind of become sort of a worldwide thing, kinda. At least in Asian speaking parts of the world, simply because it's not terribly complicated, but it's damn good tasting. And that's gyudon, also known as beef bowl. Yeah. Teresa, Chris, have either of you ever had beef bowl?
I have not.
You've not had beef bowl. Okay. What is gyudon? Well, basically what it is a bowl of rice that is topped with a combination of thinly cut beef and onions that have been simmered in a sweet, savory dashi soy sauce mirin broth.
Ooh, umami.
Yeah. And usually at the places it's served at, they'll serve it with things like raw or soft poached eggs, Welsh onions. Sometimes they'll do grated cheese, even kimchi. Usually they'll include some beni shoga or some sashimi. And it's almost always like served with like a side of miso soup. And it's one of those things that is like, it's pretty much like the Japanese. It's, you know, other than, you know, an actual hamburger. It's like the sort of like the cusp of like what Japanese fast food is supposed to be. It's now the thing is beef, you know, eating beef was not a thing that became like a big deal in modern Japan, like widespread until the Meiji Restoration. Because, you know, after Emperor Meiji and his administration were trying to westernize the country a bit. And part of that was, you know, trying to encourage Japanese people to eat more beef and pork. Because up for that point, you know, because of the influence of like Shinto and Buddhism, the eating of, you know, four-footed animals was extremely rare and even frowned upon. Now, of course, if you were a fish, you were shit out of luck. But if you were, you know, cow or, you know, pig, you were pretty okay. In fact, for a while, it was actually illegal to eat four-footed animals in Japan for like a good extended period of time. Again, because of the influence of Buddhism. But what happened is that basically in the Kanto region of eastern Japan, a hot pot dish, sometimes called gyunabe, became popular. And it has like a lot of sort of the bits that you would associate with what would become gyudon. There's, you know, you got the tender cuts of beef simmered with Welsh onions and miso. And essentially, that sort of that particular dish kind of eventually made its way to the Donburi, which, of course, are that's don. That's literally any dish that's served on top of rice in a deep bowl, and that's just not Gyudon. That's also like Buddhadon and God, a bunch. And then in 1899, a guy named Akichi Matsuda opened the first restaurant specifically dedicated to the dish. It was called Yoshinoya. It is still around. Yoshinoya still exists. There are now, in Japan, there are a bunch of, gyudon fast food chains that specialize it. And much as like how, with American hamburgers, you got McDonald's and Burger King and Wendy's at the top three. When it comes to gyudon in Japan, they have three of establishments there. The biggest one is Sukiya, which was launched in 1981. And it is famous. It's famous for the fact that on top of the gyudon, which is incredibly popular, it also sells some other stuff like curry, for example. But here, and it's the biggest one, the most popular. It took the place of what was formerly the biggest one, which was Yoshinoya, which again is still around. It's the oldest of all of the gyudon chains, and it's also the second largest. Used to be the biggest, and it is, I think when it comes to like beef bowl, it's probably the one that is probably more familiar to Westerners because it was the first beef bowl chain to actually like spread into the American market. You can find them in like a couple of airports. You can find them, I think, at Disney World. There's a couple of restaurants in Los Angeles and in New York City. And of course, they also had their own PS2 game as well.
Oh my god!
Yeah, and the third largest is Matsuya. And if you are in America, Matsuya, you are almost certainly a fan of the Yakuza franchise because the Yakuza franchise has had a tie-in with Matsuya for about as long as it has existed. So in all of the Yakuza games, when you're going to bowl, it is the Matsuya that you're going to get it from. Yes. And Matsuya is also unique because much like Sukiya, it has a more sort of more involved menu on top of the curry, the gyudon and the curry. They also have teishoku. They have like shrimp. I think they have fried chicken as well. They also have sushi. They have tonkatsu. Yeah. Now, you're probably wondering, okay, so you said that Yoshinoya was at one time the big number one beef bowl guy, and then it ended up losing to Sukiya. Why is that? Well, there's a good reason to explain it. In 2004, the United States, which is where most of the Japanese beef bowl places import their beef from, had a mad cow disease issue. And when that happened, a lot of their foreign buyers, including the Japanese, ended up stop banning American beef. Japanese government basically forced Yoshinoya to pretty much all but terminate gyudon sales during that time. What happened during this time is that Yoshinoya decided, okay, so we still got to, do business. Well, what do we do? Instead, what we'll do is we'll take our, instead of beef, we'll decide to use pork instead. We'll call it Buddhadon. And that happened. And as you can probably guess, their sales did not do well. Sukiya, however, managed to do much better. Why? Because they ended up taking a risk, and they ended up importing their beef from Australia, which meant that they were able to keep putting out gyudon, even though they had to raise the price a little bit, And at the same time, they added a new dish, Tundon, which was their form of Butadon, to its menu. Which meant that not only were they able to keep Gyudon sales, they were also basically able to eat Yoshinoya as lunch money. And as for Matsuya, they basically just did what Matsuya did, which if the beef prices become too big, we'll start to focus on some of the other stuff we have in our menu. Yeah, basically what happened was that beef imports then finally started again in early 2005, but was reinstated in January the next year. Eventually, the ban was lifted completely towards the end of 2006. And because of that ban, it completely redid the whole freaking market. Yoshinoya ended up becoming number two, and Tsukiya ended up becoming number one. Yeah, and yeah, like I said, Yoshinoya is the only three that you can actually find, like, an American, you know, places. You can find it in California. There's one, there was locations that had been in Dallas and Arizona. They closed later that year. Like I said, it's one of those things that's like probably the closest example that the Japanese have of a homegrown hamburger, and it's treated much the same way as well. And if you ever get a chance, try them, because they're legitimately really good. And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Poet.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
And I definitely have already found a place near me who has beef bowl.
Yeah.
And maybe some night this week, because they're not open on Sundays, I'll go to Torizen and eat it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not, you know, it's not terribly complicated, but it's definitely good. All right, so moving on from there, we're going to start off with the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we have to start off with the assholes of the week. And our assholes of the week are all those dipshits who tried to do that election audit in the state of Arizona because, oh boy, this is funny. Not only did it confirm that Biden did in fact win in Arizona, he actually won by a larger margin than originally counted.
Yep, this was a review of the election in Maricopa County, where Phoenix and Tempe is in.
Yeah.
About 2.1 million ballots were cast. They tried everything they could. But yeah, the hand recount for Biden exceeded the county's tally by 99 votes, while Trump received 261 fewer votes than the official results. So, yeah, maybe 350 votes difference out of 2.1 million ballots, which is practically nothing. This was the one where they were trying to take it up to Montana. Some weird secrecy bid that got the state Senate to have to tell them, like, either put your shit out or stop fucking around. But what do you expect out of a company named Cyber Ninjas?
It was funny, too, because as the lead-up to them revealing it, like, they revealed the draft of what the report was, and it's like, yeah, this confirms that, you know, what you already knew. That he won. Turns out he actually won by an even larger margin than what counted.
It's just icing on the cake.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you may have noticed Fox News has not said a damn thing about it.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Well, they announced that Biden still won.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, so.
Mm-hmm.
There's that, 10 months later, getting the result that we knew was the thing back in November.
Yep. But yeah, it was basically like, what was that, like $300 million down the drain?
Yeah, it's really bad.
And now the taxpayers also have to pay for new election machinery.
Yep. And, you know, in Wisconsin, they're like, yeah, we're not gonna do this shit. Mm-hmm. This is gonna cost us too much. Let's not do this. So let's see if people listen, because it would it'd be great if they did.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it looks like they're gonna do Texas as well.
Ah, well, fucking Texas.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, Trump won Texas by a fairly handy margin.
Yeah. Yep.
But for some reason, he got this wild hair up his ass where they need to do some, you know, they need to do an audit in Texas. And of course, Governor Abbott, what's he going to do but roll over and play dead? Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway. But now we've also got our heroes of the week. And the first one, my home state of Georgia, specifically in Atlanta, an entrepreneur and rapper set up a grocery store in Georgia in a middle of a Georgia middle school to help combat child hunger. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. This is a social entrepreneur, Jasmine Crow, mm-hmm. and rapper Gunna.
Yep.
Opened a free grocery store inside his old middle school.
Mm-hmm.
This is Ronald McNair Middle School in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
The store is called Gunna's Drip Closet and Gooder Grocery Store. Because I guess yeah. the Jasmine Crow
Close.
Opened Gooder, mm-hmm. startup dedicated to eliminating food waste. So yeah, it's essentially a store that you can go to, grab groceries, snacks, all sorts of things that you might need, as well as clothing and toiletries and other sort of things you might need as well.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. So the principal describes it as a mini Walmart of sorts.
Mm.
Yeah, everything's free. Stocks replenished weekly. There are even vegan options as well as fresh produce. And plenty of easy and quick options as well. Mm-hmm. So if you need, a quick thing you can make up for lunch, whatever. There you go.
Yep.
And they're hoping to expand other schools.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah. Look, because anybody who knows, we've seen amount of food every year.
It's really bad, yes.
And a lot of it is because just it's endemic to the business model of supermarkets, because you got to make sure all that produce is, nice and photogenic at the front, or otherwise nobody's this other thing happened. The house passed a bill to protect a person's access to abortions, essentially trying to encode Roe v. Wade in federal law. Is it going to get to the Senate?
It will, but it's not gonna do anything because they're gonna throw up the filibuster.
Yeah,
block it.
Or they could say filibuster and vote on it.
Yeah. There's a Senate version of the bill sponsored by Connecticut Democrat Richard Blumenthal's 47 co-sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's unlikely to garner the support of Pennsylvania Democrat Bob Casey and West Virginia moderate Joe Manchin,
yeah. who
did not sponsor this bill.
Yeah.
So, great news.
Yeah, wonderful.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But at least one part of the legislative branch is doing its friggin' job. But anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So with that, we are moving on from the show proper to the proper show proper. And first thing we gotta do is we gotta go out to that alley, pull up the garage door, beep beep, here comes the COVID-19 dump truck. And before we get onto the stories, I wanted to sort of real quick talk about what the vaccination rate here in the United States is. I'm checking this. This is at usafacts.org. And as of the 24th of September, that's yesterday, 65% of the population has received at least one dose of the vaccine or of one of the vaccines. And overall, about 56% of the population has been fully vaccinated. Yeah. So, it's
be better. But,
it's ticking up slowly, but steadily. If we keep up to this pace, we'll probably be up to where we need to be, hopefully by the end of the year. Moving on from there, first story for COVID we got here. Pfizer trial for kids aged 5 to 11 is showing promising results so far. So fingers crossed it won't be too long until they can finally, you know, sort of combine it into the string of vaccines you have to get before you go into public school.
Yeah. They said their early results of their trial indicated the vaccine is safe for children, establishes a strong antibody response against the virus.
Mm-hmm.
It's a two-dose regimen of 10 micrograms, administered 21 days apart for children between 5 and 11. Side effects are also generally comparable to those of people between ages of 16 and 25 who received the vaccine, as is about a third of the dose that was used for people 12 and older.
Mm-hmm.
So that is pretty good news.
Yes, it is. Very good. On top of that, the FDA has also the distribution of booster shots for people 65 plus and over and others at high risk.
Yep.
So, you know, if you've gotten the vaccine, you're in that age group, but, you know, you want to make sure that you've got the protection that you want, you can go and get a booster, which is good.
Yeah, Biden has said he's going to get his.
Yeah. All right. And then we get to the not so good news, which is that COVID in the U.S. has officially reached the level of Americans killed by the Spanish flu of 1918.
Yeah. It's about 675,000 Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Though for when that happens, there was about one third of the people in this country. So that was a bigger portion of the country that was.
It was a much larger swath of the population than as it is now.
Well, I can see right now we are at 687,000 deaths, so we've blown right past it.
Yeah.
But people still trying to act like there's nothing going on.
Mm-hmm.
It was all an overreaction.
Yeah.
I just can't stomach to read any more of the Herman Cain Award recipients because there's so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many of them, and not all of them are like, oh man, I really fucked up. I had this one shot, and I just fucked it up royally. No, a good number of them aren't admitting that.
A lot of them are completely unrepentant. Yeah. And here's some especially awful news. In the state of Alabama, deaths actually outnumbered births in 2020 for the first time in the state's history.
Yeah, it's hard.
They had almost 65,000 deaths last year.
Mm-hmm.
Just over 57,000 births.
Mm-hmm.
Those numbers are preliminary and will be sort of finalized by the end of this year.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's not good. This sort of thing in World War II.
Mm-hmm. The population noticeably shrank.
Yeah. At least for people coming into and out of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if people moving in or whatnot counters that a little bit, but these were purely people dying or being born. It's on a negative curve for the 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they won't do anything about it.
And finally, for those who don't know, Florida, Governor DeSantis recently got a new Surgeon General for the state. The individual was part of that group of quacks, including the infamous demon semen lady.
Yeah, her.
And one of his first acts was to end all quarantining in the state. And because of that, students in Florida are no longer required to quarantine after being exposed.
Yeah, their parents get to decide whether they should quarantine or stay in school.
Mm-hmm.
If they're asymptomatic after being exposed, someone who's tested positive for COVID-19.
I know somebody who needs to be brought up on murder charges.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, in addition to DeSantis.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say public execution, but I want to say public execution.
Yeah. Reminder, folks, we have midterm elections next year. So,
yes.
Yeah. But, all right. So, that's the end of the COVID news for this week. We're going to go ahead and back into the garage, shut the door, tune in next week, and we will almost assuredly have to take it out once again. Fun, fun, fun. Well, moving on from there. I think this was a story either last week or the week before. There was a doctor in Texas who published an op-ed in, I think it was the New York Times, where he admitted to performing an abortion for a woman against the current law because she needed it, and specifically because he was hoping to challenge the law head on.
And he had a duty of care.
Yeah. And it came out this week that he is the sort of bounty hunterist system that they got in Texas. He is now being sued by two people.
Mm-hmm.
Two people from out of state.
Yeah.
They're both former attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
One from Arkansas.
Yeah.
Who I think he's, they don't identify which one's which. There's one from Arkansas, one from Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that's a former lawyer who lost his law license after being convicted of tax fraud in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Said he's not opposed to abortion, but sued to force a court review of Texas anti-abortion law, which he called mm-hmm. an end run. I don't want doctors out there nervous and sitting there and quaking in their boots and saying, I can't do this. Because if this thing works out, then I'm going to be bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Arkansas guy. There's the other one from Chicago, asked a court in San Antonio in his lawsuit to declare the new law unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
His view of the law as a form of government overreach. He said his lawsuit is a way to hold the Republicans who run Texas accountable, adding that their lax response to public health during COVID-19 pandemic conflicts with their crackdown on abortion rights.
Yeah.
Republicans are going to say nobody can tell you to get a shot. They shouldn't tell women what to do with their bodies either.
Yeah.
I think it should be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And all the national people helped sort of come up with this law in the first place. They're like, wait, no, this isn't how it's supposed to go. And I'm like, mm-hmm. how naive can you be?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Next up, some of our listeners who might be on the younger side, for a long time in the United States military, there was this thing called Don't Ask, Don't Tell that was largely instituted under President Bill Clinton. But basically, it was during the ban of LGBT peoples in the military. If you were found to be of a queer persuasion, you would be considered a security risk and could be expelled from discharged from the military. Often without your benefits. Now, Don't Ask, Don't Tell ended under President Obama after he was elected. But the problem is, because of that, there's been this huge issue of people who were discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell trying to get the benefits that are rightfully owed to them. Well, that chance is coming back around again, thanks to new news that came out this week.
Yep. So this is kind of this is on the 10th anniversary of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Mm-hmm.
Applies to veterans who are forced from service under the policy and given other than the honorable discharge for their reason for dismissal due to their orientation, gender identity, or HIV status.
Mm-hmm.
There's a blog post on the VA's website that you can look in for more details, but it provides LGBTQ veterans the opportunity to receive assistance ranging from mental health care and disability benefits to college money and home loans.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of just clarifies existing rules in place, but does not represent a specific legal change. So good to remind these people that they can get those benefits even if they were dismissed during that part of the bad history for the military. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So hopefully that works out. Next up. So it, because it hasn't really been talked about, kind of forget that this is still ongoing, but the Trump Organization's tax fraud trial, that had been, you know, like they had been developing a case and getting stuff together. And now there actually is a trial, and the trial is now being set to begin a few months before the 2022 midterm elections.
Yep. Yeah, they're either late August, early September 2022.
Mm-hmm.
So could potentially be a good sort of campaign point for Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
For any sort of support he tries to drum up for Republicans for the midterms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
There may be others coming, so hopefully we get more good news on that front.
Mm-hmm. All right. So next up, Hobby Lobby, one of the most evil corporations out there, simply because of their extreme moral hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Well, as has come out in the last few years, the owner and CEO of Hobby Lobby apparently has a dabbled a bit in antiquities theft in order to fund the Bible museum he had hoped to open up.
Mm-hmm.
And among the artifacts he ended up either willingly or unwillingly buying from antiquities thieves in the past, being the Gilgamesh Dream Tablet, which for those of you wondering, it's a tablet that talks about the part of the Epic of Gilgamesh where Gilgamesh is, you know, having a dream.
Yep.
You know, kind of self-explanatory. Yep. Well, after years of negotiating, finally going back to its rightful place in the country of Iraq.
Yep. This is part of a group of about 17,000 looted antiquities that the U.S. has agreed to return to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them went back in July.
Yeah.
It seems like this is happening or just happened a few days ago.
Yeah.
So it's good to return it where it belongs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And let's please not let them get any monetary compensation, Hobby Lobby, that is, or any tax write-off for this, because fuck them.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Antiquity.
Certainly hope not.
It was seized by U.S. authorities in 2019, saying it was stolen and needed to be returned.
Yeah. Antiquity theft should have stiff penalties.
It should, but he's rich, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the theft part of this, it's not mentioned here, but I had seen people mention that it was potentially ISIS that had stolen a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sold it off to fund whatever they needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Hobby Lobby happened to be one of the companies acquiring 17,000 items.
Mm-hmm.
Because why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. It says here they agreed to pay a $3 million fine in a settlement with the Justice Department to return thousands of these tablets to Iraq. So
not nearly enough.
Yeah, again, true.
No, but they lose all the money they spent on that stuff on top of fine.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true.
Oh. Your stupid Bible, museum Bible.
Yeah.
Shit in D.C.
Yeah. But moving on from there, over in España, Spanish island of La Palma, had a volcanic eruption, which is bad enough.
Yeah.
But the eruption was so strong that it actually opened up a brand new lava vent. That ended up burying hundreds of buildings and placing hundreds, if not thousands, of people.
Ouch.
Yeah, they've had like 6,000 people get evacuated.
Yep.
There is one house that has survived.
Mm-hmm.
And called the Miracle House, I guess.
Yeah.
Owned by an elderly Danish couple that had been gone since the start of the coronavirus pandemic.
Well, that's random.
But they have
I mean, I'm glad, you know.
Yeah. But luckily, now they got some new surroundings on their house.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of lava around it.
Yeah.
Or rock around it, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, this started erupting last Sunday. Yeah, about 6,000 people have been evacuated. The airport is shut down because it started raining ash and all this sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So not much of an easy way to get out of there that way. So I imagine just boats.
Yeah.
Going through. So telling the people that are staying there that are not near these volcanoes, just stay inside because there's still susceptible to earthquakes, lava flows, toxic gases, volcanic ash, and acid rain. So,
jeez.
Telling people stay inside.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ouch.
In other science news, there were some footprints that were recently discovered that would suggest that humans have actually been in North America earlier than originally thought. And people don't realize that there's been like a bunch of debates and talk of like, you know, how humans actually got to North America. Do you remember when we were kids and we learned that the first peoples who got to America originally,
the land bridge?
Yeah, by the land bridge in, I think it was in northern, it was in Russia that.
Yeah, through Alaska. Yeah.
Yeah, during the Ice Age.
Yeah, that's what we were taught.
And then it turns out that might not be true.
Yeah,
so this involves analysis of ancient fossilized human footprints in New Mexico. Pushed the date to about 21,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Or at least 21,000 years ago. They examined a set of human footprints preserved on an ancient lake shore in New Mexico's White Sands National Park, which is now just dry chalk-colored dunes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Made between 21,000 and 22,000 years old, they would place human habitation in the Americas during the last glacial maximum, and at least 5,000 years earlier than widely accepted evidence had yet suggested. And it seems like a lot of these footprints were probably mostly children and teenagers.
Yeah.
So they went to go fuck around on the beach.
Yeah, probably. Because children and teenagers are the same in every age.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
And I think a lot of people don't realize it. Even in like North America, we have, because, you know, the way that we interact with the native peoples at that particular time, we have a certain image of what their lives were. But the truth of the matter is that before then, the native peoples of North America had a very advanced urban civilization.
Yeah.
With lots of big buildings and, you know, very advanced roadways and travel and commerce. And then what happened is that a really nasty disease came and basically wiped out 80% of the population. So by the time, like, the first major Western expeditions came here, you were basically experiencing the post-apocalyptic North America, essentially.
Yeah, they're not seeing the heyday of like Cahokia here in Illinois, which I think we've talked about before on this
podcast. Yeah, we did briefly.
Yeah. Massive settlement.
Yeah. And you notice the thing was fairly nomadic tribes that tended to, you know, move around a lot, ended up surviving the whole thing. So by the time, you know, our ancestors got here, those were the ones that we experienced firsthand. Moving on from there, Hurricane Sam, fourth major hurricane of the season, is luckily not going to hit land. So, hooray.
Yep.
It looks like I'm going to go another year without having to deal with a tropical storm again.
Yeah, it's... So, you know, the closest it's going to get to land is it's going to go by the Bahamas here probably tomorrow, Sunday. But yeah, it seems like it's going to just stay out in the Atlantic, maybe get some more strength here, but it's going to be turning into a Category 4 hurricane, sustained winds of about 140 miles per hour. So it could get even stronger now from here. But yeah, luckily it just seems like it's going to most likely just stay out in the Atlantic Ocean.
Okay. Yeah. We have probably just chinked it, and now it's probably going to head right to the Gulf of Mexico. So
let's hope not.
Yeah. And next up, in order to make themselves more green, McDonald's Happy Meals will no longer include plastic toys. Now, that doesn't mean that they will not include toys, period.
Mm-hmm.
But they will not be making, including the plastic ones that we all grew up.
Yeah, sort of like this plastic.
I kind of feel like there weren't Happy Meal toys when I was young. Like,
yeah, because the thing is, I'm pretty sure that particular. You know what? I'm gonna look it up.
Yeah, I'm looking too. 1979. I would be fucking wrong.
That's what I thought. But, I mean, McDonald's had been around since the 50s, so, I mean, that is kind of relatively more recent than I thought it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, let's be honest, they weren't really good toys anyway.
No! They still aren't good toys.
No. I mean,
although,
yeah.
You know, I do remember the dressed up chicken nuggets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those were fun. But honestly, it was, let's be honest though, it was Burger King that had the better shit because they had the Pokemon stuff.
They did. They freaking did.
Including the cards. There were special Pokemon cards you could only get at Burger King.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's one of those weird little things that they started doing. I was like, you know, I think it was really more the idea is what sold it more than the actual toy itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's right. I forgot about the Transformer cartons. They used to have styrofoam cartons that the sandwiches and chicken nuggets and stuff came in.
Yeah.
And they had, like, Transformer fries and Transformer cartons for, oh, my God. Okay,
they also had mini Transformer toys.
They did.
Because I used to have one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we still have them hanging around in a closet somewhere here. Well, yeah. You know, I go through generations.
Well, I mean, find them. They might be worth something.
Ah, they've been played with all to death. And very recently, might I add.
Well. Alrighty then. Well. Alright, so. With that, we are now officially going into the entertainment portion of the show, which is 100% all Netflix related. Well, almost all of it at least. But first and foremost, we now know that The Witcher is renewed for a third season, even before season 2 has come out.
Wow.
Yeah, so. Yeah, they announced this during this Tudum event. I don't know what the pronunciation is, but it's like a fan event they were holding.
Yeah.
A bunch of stuff, so you can go to the Netflix YouTube channel and see a bunch of clips of other stuff that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But for The Witcher, yeah, they announced that they'd renewed it for a third season ahead of the season 2 launching. Mm-hmm. They've been doing a lot of work on expanding the Witcher stuff they're doing because they got the Witcher Blood Origin that is coming out in the... At some point, I don't know if it has a date yet. There's the Witcher Nightmare of the Wolf that came out a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't checked that out yet, but I think they're probably also going to be doing some other stuff as well. So, yeah, they're all in on The Witcher.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'm glad because the first season was awesome.
I should watch that.
I will say, though, the only issue really... communicate very well where on the timeline a particular episode is sometimes. But whatever, it's fine. Then we also got the live action Cowboy Bebop series, and it looks really good. I'm not gonna lie.
Yep. It's the same theme song.
Yep, the original.
A lot of the same style going on with it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously got, instead of animated versions of the characters, you got, you know, the live-action characters.
Yep, yeah.
Looks pretty cool.
And it ended up getting a much better reception than the original fans had been poo-pooing about. I say fans, a small portion of
small because, but vocal portion.
Yeah, small but annoyingly vocal. Shut the hell up.
Yeah. And they also talked about it not being necessarily a straight remake of the series.
Yeah.
Anime, but being more of like a way of expanding things.
Mm-hmm.
So probably run into some of the same characters, but mm-hmm. Doing some new stuff with them and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It looks good. And we got a first look trailer for Netflix's Sandman series. Yes, that Sandman. The Neil Gaiman one.
It looks nice. I still don't think there's a date on this thing yet.
Gives us time to read those of us who have it and been putting it off for however many freaking years now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, I'm going to wish him good luck, because if there is a series that is really hard to adapt, it's The Sandman. Because The Sandman series, by its very nature, extremely all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you have these, you know, part of most of it, but like any good Neil Gaiman work, tends to jump around into just every kind of genre you can think of at one point or another. And it's especially odd when you're like starting at the beginning of the series, when it was more of supposed to be like an offbeat superhero type thing.
Yeah.
And developed into, you know, what the series is known for now. But yeah, definitely worth reading. Highly recommend.
I keep looking at the bookshelf in here. I thought it was on this bookshelf. It's somewhere around here. Mm. I'll find that.
Yeah. And we also got a teaser for Extraction 2.
Yeah. The first movie had Chris Hemsworth in it as like a big action movie. The weird thing, as this trailer acknowledges, is that he dies at the end of the movie.
Yep.
So he somehow... he gets like shot in the neck.
Yep.
Falls into the river below. And I guess, as this trailer suggests, he just decides to get up and live.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Whatever. There's just been one movie and done something else, but I guess they're doing a sequel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and yeah, finally, let's be honest, none of us thought would ever be able to amount to anything, and somehow ended up being one of the most acclaimed TV series existing now. Season 4 of Cobra Kai will premiere December 31st.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun to see.
Yeah.
And they already renewed it for a 5th season.
Yep.
Last month, so still got more to go for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're bringing back a couple characters from part 2.
Yep. Yeah, let's hope they stay as far.
Oh, no, wait. This is season 3, the characters they're bringing in.
Oh, yeah.
Elizabeth Shue. Or no, that's season 3. No, they're bringing the bad guys from season 3 in, I think.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, let's hope they stay far away from... Karate Kid part 2, quite good. Also, the first movie. Part 3 is an abortion that you should avoid under all circumstances.
It's just a weird movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's like, big fights with Daniel-san.
Yeah.
For some reason to get him to fight in this tournament.
Yeah.
Then we'll try and kill him.
Yeah. But, again, I am an absolute broken record to talk about this series, about the fact that on paper, it absolutely should not work. Like, you're taking this series, this film series from back in the 80s that, I mean, it's not like the Karate Kid movie, the first two Karate Kid movies were bad or anything. They were quite good, but they weren't, you know, Oscar worthy or anything like that. They were very much of their time and place, and they're definitely kind of cheesy. And yet somehow they managed to come up with this like later timeline of the story and turn it into this really interesting character piece. I mean, that takes some serious talent to pull off.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, it still kind of embraces the goofiness of the original movies.
Oh yeah.
Which is somehow amazing. But yeah. So I think I do believe we got ourselves a show, don't we? Holy crap, we do. We actually managed to do what a shock. Well then, I would like to invite all have a question or comment or something you want us to air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSSArchive.org, or any place where our little bit of insanity can be found. And pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator that you can think of. If we're not there, well, wait a few minutes. As soon as we find out that a new form exists, we will almost immediately sign up for it. So yeah, hopefully if you like this, tell it to your friends, tell it to your enemies. They may hate you, but they may like us, so you know, that'll end up working out well for us. And with that, we're gonna go ahead and sign off. So I have been your host, Brandon Perkins, and for Teresa Sammons and Chris Logie, I'd like to say good night. Sleep tight, and if you have not gotten it yet, and I will continue to say this until the end of the pandemic, if you have not gotten the vaccine and are able to get it, please go and get it, because I would like to be able to leave my house without a mask one time in my future life.